HR.
I knew it!
What's the matter with you? This is my business.
And now, back to America's Business Coach, Coach Ron Tunick.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank. This is not Coach Ron Tunick. I'm sitting in for the coach who was over in Las Vegas giving a speech to hundreds, if not thousands, of paying customers who were over there to learn from him about his sales techniques, about his management techniques, and about his coaching. I'm joined in studio, as we are every Wednesday, with Ken Henjum, who is BK Lawman and now FAM Lawman as well, we learned in our last segment.
So, correct.
There you go.
I'm the man.
glad to have you here, by the way, as well. But I've been looking forward to this next interview, Ken, for several days now, because this man is a prince among men. Hal Weitzman is the Chicago and the Midwest correspondent for the Financial Times of London. He was previously FT's Andes correspondent based in Lima, Peru, and he has written a book about South America, Latin countries, that we're going to talk about. The book is titled Latin Lessons, How South America Stopped Listening to the United States and Started Prospering. Hal, welcome to the show. How are you this evening?
I'm very well. Thank you very much for having me on.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on, and thank you so much for being a subject matter expert in this area. I'm just going to jump right into it because I have a very U.S.-centric sort of a view about this. And in the United States, ever since the Monroe Doctrine in 1823, the United States has taken sort of an active, almost parental approach to our foreign policy in Central and South America. I mean, there have been decades of destructive political and military interference, and of course, some disastrous economic and trade policies as well. Today, Latin countries represent some of the most vibrant economies in the world. And when you think about that, think about Brazil, which is one of the BRIC countries. In fact, last year, Brazil overtook the United Kingdom to become the sixth biggest economy in the world. Here's the thing, though, Hal. Brazil has been an emerging market for all of my entire working life. I mean, they've been wealthy with resources. They've got an educated population, a very stable government. So then why is it that Brazil is still considered an emerging economy?
Well, that's a great point. I mean, there's a joke in Latin America that, you know, Latin America is a continent with a great future ahead of it, and always will be. But it seems like that future is actually a lot closer than it ever has been, and the region has been growing, not just Brazil. If you look at countries like Peru and Chile, they've been growing very, very fast in the past couple of years, at the very time, of course, that up here we've been struggling. And you mentioned the Monroe Doctrine, and of course, the United States was the dominant country in this hemisphere for pretty much the past 200 years. And what we've seen in the past decade is that the U.S. has pretty much forgotten about Latin America, has turned its attention to the Middle East and to China and other challenges, and that's created a power vacuum here in the Western Hemisphere. And into that power vacuum have come China and Russia and Iran. You know, there's a narrative about those of us who've written and thought about Latin America that Latin America was somehow the forgotten continent or the lost continent. You know, I say in the book that people thought about Latin America as kind of sleeping beauty, as though and the U.S. United States was the handsome prince, and all we needed was the prince to be bothered to cut through the weeds, and he would kiss the region back to life. But actually, it wasn't forgotten. It was only forgotten here in the United States, but it wasn't forgotten in Beijing or in Moscow or in Tehran. So other people have been coming into this hemisphere. And to go back to the Monroe Doctrine, the whole idea of the Monroe Doctrine wasn't that the U.S. went down and meddled in Latin America. It was, in fact, to tell other powers, powers like Spain and France and Great Britain, that they shouldn't meddle in this hemisphere. And in the past 10 years, the United States has effectively abdicated from the region and has allowed exactly that to happen with these new powers.
Well, that's an interesting point, and one that I wanted to pursue a little bit later in the conversation. But let's do it now, because abdication is a strong word. It makes it look as though we've just given up on Latin America, which we haven't. The reality is the United States foreign policy has turned towards radical Islam, has been focused on Iran, Iraq, Afghanistan, and focused in that region of the world. And let's face it, we're just one country. We can't be everywhere at every time. So while our foreign policy has changed, and that power vacuum, as you called it, but I would call it a diversion of foreign policy, has allowed Iran to come in, that's troublesome, China to come in, and of course Russia to come in. Now, what are the long-term implications of these guys playing around in our backyard and cozying up to our South American neighbors?
Well, you have to look at what their motivations are. You know, they're very much interested in, first, in the natural resources that this region possesses in abundance. And when it comes to the question of what does this mean for the United States, I wonder how many of your readers know that it's Latin America that is the largest source of U.S. Oil imports, not the Middle East. So when we talk all the time about our dependency on Middle East oil imports, in fact, our biggest source of imports is Latin America. So if you look at the way that the Chinese and the Russians and others have come in and have said, well, we want to get more, we want to buy more of your oil, that definitely has an effect on the United States. It could affect our energy security at any time. And look at what's happening in the Middle East, right? With the Arab Spring, those supplies are not dependable at all. So in that sense, the energy relationship is extremely important, and that's one of the motivations for these countries coming in. But, I mean, the second point relates back to what we talked about a second ago. The other motivation for countries, particularly like Iran, is that they want to establish a foothold in a region that Washington traditionally regards as its backyard. And there is a national security aspect to this, because in the wake of Iran's increasing engagement with Latin America, and you've seen, for example, that they have more than doubled the number of embassies that they have in Latin America, not to mention a whole range of commercial arrangements as well. In the wake of those, you've seen organizations like Hezbollah and Islamic Jihad stepping up their presence in the region, so they're getting more involved in drug trafficking. They're doing more money laundering in South America. And in some cases, they have even plotted. You may remember, if you went back last year, there was a plot by Iran to assassinate the Saudi Arabian ambassador to the United States. Now, that was a plot that was hatched in collaboration with the Zetas, a notorious Mexican drug gang. So this is something that's extremely worrying, not only for our energy security, but for our national security, too.
Very good points. Our guest is Hal Weitzman. He's author of the book Latin Lessons. And, Hal, I just want to go back and correct something that you said on energy independence, energy security there. Latin America is a major source of oil for the U.S., but our number one partner in trading oil is still Canada. It's Canada, Mexico, and then followed by Latin America in terms of this
hemisphere. No, I think if you look at the Latin America outweighs Canada as a major source of oil. And certainly, I mean, Canada is extremely important. Latin America is extremely important. They are much more important collectively than the Middle East. So let's agree on this. In the Americas as a whole, because my book is about the whole region, right? And the way that we want to look at the whole region. If we take Canada and Latin America together, and maybe you and I are looking at different data, but if we take all those data together, Latin America, the Americas is by far the most important source of energy. So this is where we need to be looking for on questions like energy security.
Hear, hear. Couldn't agree with you more there. Now, I want to come back to the political side of things for just a moment, because you mentioned that Iran and Hezbollah and others have been kind of raising mischief here in this hemisphere. The reality is we've got our own set of bad boys down in South America as well. Everybody's familiar with a bad boy of Venezuela. That's Hugo Chavez and his anti down there, his nationalization of the industries and his leanings towards communism. But there's also Evo Morales in Bolivia and Rafael Correa in Ecuador as well. What's going to happen as these people, like Castro did in the 60s, start to turn towards more radical forms of government and start to cozy up to those types of governments? What's going to happen politically as they get more involved with the likes of Iran, the likes of even Cuba and other countries who wouldn't mean to do us harm?
Well, I mean, they are already involved. You know, it's not a question of when are they going to become involved. They are already very close to Iran. And the interesting thing that, you know, at a time when we are trying to isolate Iran internationally, an important part of that is that we want not only Iran to step back from the brink, which it doesn't seem like they're going to do for the moment, but we want the Iranian people to turn against their own leadership, to say this is not acceptable. And Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the Iranian president, was in South America just last month, and he was touring around these friendly countries that you talked about. He went to Venezuela, he went to Ecuador, he went to Nicaragua, he went to Cuba. And he's able to say to his people, I'm not isolated internationally. Look at all the friends I have, and not only do I have friends, but they're friends in America's backyard. So it's a worrying precedent. To be honest with you, I'm not sure at the moment we kind of are heading into an end game with Iran. I'm not sure that it makes a huge amount of difference. It's not going to sway it one way or the other. But as I said, there is this terrorist link as well, and we don't want to forget that this is an important strategic base from which terrorist attack could be launched against the United States and against other targets. I mean, there have been Jewish targets attacked in South America as well. In the 1990s, Iran directed an attack that was carried out by Hezbollah that bombed the Jewish community center in Buenos Aires, and it was the bloodiest terrorist attack that country has ever had. So this is a very serious problem. It has a, you know, we can ignore them and say that they're just shouting at us, but it has serious implications.
My guest is Hal Weitzman, author of the book Latin Lessons, How South America Stopped Listening to the United States and Started Prospering. And Hal, to many Americans and many of my listeners, Latin America has been plagued with instable governments, a divided class system, the rich and the poor, and of course the exports of raw material that we've talked a little bit about here. But in what ways has Latin America changed its political, social, and economic policies to become a stronger player in the world economy?
Great question. I mean, I guess my short answer to you would be this. In the 1980s and 1990s, multilateral institutions like the IMF and the World Bank, backed by the United States, essentially told governments in Latin America that there was only one way that they could develop their economies, and that was that they had to remove the state from the economy, and they had to make themselves as attractive as possible to foreign investors. And, you know, for some people it worked, and for some countries it didn't work. And what we've seen in the last decade is that a lot of countries, not only the radicals like Venezuela, but also moderate countries like Brazil, have turned their back on some of those policies, and that's meant they've had more money coming into central government, and they've been spending that money on things like poverty reduction. And so poverty rates have really fallen very dramatically in Latin America at the very time that poverty and inequality has gotten worse in the United States. But, you know, there's also a much bigger global story that's happened in Latin America, and that really has been about the commodity boom. So everything that Latin America makes and exports, from oil to metals and minerals to agricultural products like soybeans, and sends off to China, the prices for those commodities in the past 6-7 years has absolutely exploded. It's taken off, and that has meant a huge cash windfall for these countries. That's fed, that huge increase in revenues has fed some of the left-wing nationalism that we talked about.
It has, Hal. But let me just ask you to follow up on that question for just a moment. Any country, any economy that uses exports as its foundation really never develops a middle class. You need manufacturing. You need to have homegrown industries that do something with those raw materials as well. What is South America doing? Maybe it's not the entire region, but what are certain individual countries doing to develop that manufacturing infrastructure that's needed to build a middle class and to get people out of poverty?
Well, they're in the same spot that we're in up in the United States. It's difficult. You know, when you base your economy on manufacturing, you are competing against China, where they can manufacture anything, they can copy anything, they can make it very cheaply. And whereas the advantage that we have up in the U.S. is that we can compete on the higher end, right? We have great ideas, we can innovate, we can be a home to knowledge creation. Latin America has been much, much slower on that. So at the same time, as you suggest, that they've been able to have this huge benefit, this windfall, this bonanza from natural resources, their manufacturing has been suffering. So you've seen Brazilian shoemakers, Brazilian car makers, Brazilian textile industry really suffering from a flood of cheap Chinese exports. And I argue in my book that actually that creates an opening for the United States, because many of the issues that we have with countries like China